Delma T, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. It's Friday, the day that we've been dreaming about all week long. It's finally here. And the celebrity parade continues. For some reason this week, a lot of famous people have joined us. Normally, at the very beginning of the show, that will kind of continue today.
Yes, rock icon Ann Wilson. And I was just telling you off the air, we talked to Bob Odenkirk, who we both love, mm-hmm. Eric Idle. Mm-hmm. That was just this week. Mm-hmm. I get nervous about them, but there's something about these rock and rollers that just make me so nervous when I'm going to talk to them.
Why rock and rollers more than the other guests?
I think because I love them so much. I really do. I love music, and yeah. I hate to use your word from yesterday, but I gush.
Yeah.
I geek out.
It's a little bit of that, but it's, I think in the cases we've just mentioned, and in Ann Wilson's case, it's deserved gushing, right?
I have always wanted to be a singer. Ann Wilson has the best voice mm-hmm. in all of rock and roll.
And it blended so nicely with her sister's voice. And I'm not saying it could never happen again. I know that they have a tumultuous relationship.
I don't know where
friendly,
it stands
sometimes
exactly.
Not friendly. I'd like to see them and the Gallagher brothers sing together, because they also don't always get along. So that'd be a good show, is brothers and sisters who fight. I would pay a lot of money to see that. Are you nervous about Ann Wilson?
I'm a little nervous.
She's going to be on in a little bit. She's going to be on in about 10 minutes, 5 or 10
no,
minutes.
No, like 2 minutes.
2 minutes, yeah. Oh, now I'm nervous. I wasn't until then. Now I am. You know what I thought about, though, as we were talking to Eric Idle yesterday? I know this is very inside, but I want to share it. Every once in a while, we'll have a guest on who I've admired forever, and you or I will say something, and then they'll laugh. And I'll go, we just made Eric Idle laugh. You know, I know that sounds crazy, but you go, for years and years and years, I've laughed at things that guy or that girl's done, and now the tables are turned. It feels really good when that happens.
Well, let's take a quick break and see if you can make Ann Wilson laugh.
That's my goal, is to make her laugh.
All right.
That's all I want to do today.
It's a Friday. A lot of news coming out. We'll keep you posted on all of that today. And amidst that, we have some great guests, including Ann Wilson, coming up next at 720 WGN.
Just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't play with other boys.
All right, I have complete goosebumps, covered in goosebumps. Rock and roll icon, the greatest voice in rock and roll, Ann Wilson, joins us right now. How are you, Ann?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. How are you? We've got a bad connection here, Ann. I hate to say that.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's a little better. The Leslie Gore tune, 1963, is very apropos right now in this Me Too movement, You Don't Own Me. Did you think about that at all when you released that on this new record, Immortal?
Yeah, I did a little bit. But now I think even just since over the last 3 or 4 weeks, the message of this song, You Don't Own Me, is gaining momentum, strength, and meaning for our time. It's more now.
Absolutely. Warren Haynes, of course, on guitar. We've talked to him before.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Bill.
He's
Government
great.
Mule, the Allman Brothers. Now, you are trying to immortalize some of your favorite songs, your favorite artists. I was thinking about this on the way in. It was always our parents' entertainers who passed away, and now it's touching my world. These icons are gone.
Yeah, and so many of them passed away in a short time. That's what got me thinking about making this record. We lost Leslie Gore, Chris Cornell, Tom Petty, David Bowie, Jack Bruce, Leonard Cohen, Glenn Frey, Amy Winehouse, George Michael. That's just to name a few.
Right. Prince, Tom Petty, the list goes on and on.
Yeah. I just wanted to do something to honor these people.
So Amy Winehouse had such an amazing voice. I love your version of it. I'm sorry, I'm geeking out a little bit. I've been a fan of yours forever. The greatest voice in rock and roll. I do want to bring up when you sang at the Kennedy Honors Ceremony, Kennedy Center Honors, you did Stairway to Heaven. It was unbelievable. You have your Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, and John Paul Jones watching on. Jason Bonham is behind you on drums. What did Plant think of your version of Stairway to Heaven?
He told me he liked it. He said that he normally doesn't like it when people cover Stairway to Heaven because they just kind of, he doesn't like the way it sounds. But he did allow that he did like the version at the Kennedy Center on it.
Oh, it was so good. And I have this great idea, which I'm sure people have approached you with before. If Robert Plant doesn't want a Led Zeppelin reunion, why don't you just take his spot with Robert and Jimmy and John Paul?
Well, now that'd be up to Robert and Jimmy and John Paul, too, you know. I mean, it's just like you can just jump into a band. It's got to be everyone's idea. I don't think those guys really feel like doing a reproduction of Led Zeppelin with a different singer, you know. I mean, they're doing their own stuff.
Yeah, that's true. And so, Immortal, you are still touring. You were just in town opening for Paul Rodgers. And who else was there?
Jeff Beck.
Jeff Beck.
Oh, impressive.
Yeah.
And we're all so in awe of you and your musical ability. Who are you in awe of?
Well, let's see. In awe of... Well, I like... I really go after the most sort of deep cut artists. Like, I like Lucinda Williams. I'm in awe of her songwriting. I like Leonard Cohen. I mean, as a lyricist, you can't beat him.
Yep, good, great choices.
Those are good choices.
Thank you.
I've been on the radio for over 30 years in Chicago. I started in rock radio, so of course Barracuda, Crazy on You, Dreamboat Annie, all these songs were played and they were greater every time I heard them. In fact, the first rock and roll show that we took our sons to was to see Heart live in action in Naperville. They were 6 and 10 at the time, and thank God they turned into rock and rollers after that. You covered The Who's Love Rain or Me. What can't you do, Ann? I got to ask you that.
Oh, there's no answer to that. I don't know. I just want to stay with the stuff that makes me excited and that I think I can do well, you know.
You were out at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles, and songs from Immortal, which is the new record. This is going to be featured on a television special. Any info on the release of that?
Not sure. No, I don't know the release day of it. We were being really careful with the way it looked and making sure it's all edited right and that it's just a beautiful looking thing. I signed off on it a couple of weeks ago. So it should be on, it's going to be on TBS and Access, so I think it'll be later on this fall.
Can't wait to see it. All right, so how did you come to the conclusion of which song to perform for some of these great artists? Like the Amy Winehouse track is Back to Black, Jerry Rafferty, Baker Street, his biggest
nice.
Hit.
Yeah.
How did you come up with some of these? I bet it was hard to choose which song to cover.
Well, I just wanted to not just go for the hits. I wanted to go for the songs that really turned me on the most from the different artist catalogs. So that was fairly easy. They just sort of jumped out at me, you know. I chose the ones that have the best lyrics and the most interesting, the most fun to sing.
Like Luna from Tom Petty, Politician from Cream, that is such a great song in honor of Jack Bruce. And Life in the Fast Lane to honor Glenn Frey. It's pretty cool. It's so weird to see all these rock and rollers gaining in age. How old is Mick Jagger now? In his 70s, right?
I have no idea. And, you know, 70's the new 40.
Yeah, exactly.
And at some point, Hollywood will realize that your story will make for a great movie. So who plays you in the movie, do you think?
Wow. I don't know. Somebody funny, probably.
Sarah Silverman, maybe.
Yes. Now we're talking.
Yeah. There you go.
The range in your singing is just phenomenal. I was in choir in school. I'm a closet rock and roller. I sing in my basement with a PA system. But you, I always hated being an alto. You can go low. You can hit those high notes. Unbelievable range on you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's just a matter of opening up and letting it fly.
And that's what you do. How old were you when you first started singing?
Professionally, I was 22, I think, maybe 21. Yeah.
And you and your sister Nancy formed a band. How old were you then? When's the first time you guys played together?
The first time Nancy and I played together, she was 8 and I was,
oh my God,
13.
There's no hope for me.
Did you know then, though, could you tell at 8 and 13 the magic that was going to be created over the years? Was it obvious?
Well, we knew that we were obsessed with learning how to play the guitar and learning chords and how to sing songs together in harmony. We didn't even begin to know what fame would be like or what the kind of sacrifice it took to maintain something like a career in music. No, we didn't know that. We just knew that we loved singing and playing together, and one thing led to another, you know.
I can't even imagine the tours you must have been on at the height of your popularity. You were never home, were you?
Still never home. But you're right. To have a career in the field of music and do it on a high level, it takes complete sacrifice. I mean, you take that life in place of a normal life.
It's a pretty cool life, though, and we're so glad you're in it. Immortal is available in stores now. It's on iTunes, Amazon. You can get it anywhere you want. This is what you got to do, Immortal. 10 songs on this? 10 different tracks?
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right, perfect. Well,
yeah, 10 songs.
10 songs, and, you know, I hate to see these rock and rollers pass away, but I look forward to another Immortal album coming up soon. Not soon.
Right.
Way down the road. Yeah. Way down the road.
All right. Well, hopefully it won't be very soon. Right.
Right. It's a pleasure to meet you. Congratulations. We'll look for that television special and let people know when to do it and watch it. And in the meantime, pick up Immortal. Such a pleasure to talk to you, Anne.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's Anne Wilson, ladies
and gentlemen. That was her.
I'm flushed.
Are you still nervous?
Yes.
Are you? Yeah.
I just, honest to God, one of the best voices in rock and roll. I'm not even saying best female voices.
Yeah.
Because she can cover a man's tune like you wouldn't believe. She does interesting choices here. The David Bowie song that is on Immortal is I'm Afraid of Americans. And then Leslie Gore, we heard that You Don't Own Me. That came out in 1963.
I'm anxious to hear the Back in Black version, the Amy Winehouse hit Back in Black. I'm very anxious because
it's really good.
She brings a moodiness to the music that I love. So, all right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a whole bunch more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me. Why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Mag?
Do you know I've never seen this movie?
You've never
Isn't
seen
that
Morning
terrible
Vietnam?
Of me?
Oh, Wendy, you need to go see it now. I'll wait for
All
you.
All right.
I will wait right here. A tribute to Robin Williams. More than a tribute, an experience. Robin, the ultimate Robin Williams tribute experience, is going on this weekend at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. Roger Kabler, who portrays Robin Williams in the show, and Bill Kirkenbauer, comedian and actor, both here to talk about it. Hi, guys.
Hey, how you
doing? How are you?
Oh, I have so much competition this morning with myself. It's really incredible. I'm checking all the vital organs. Everything seems to be okay. Hey, Bill. Pass me a couple of those, will you? Hello. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Paul.
I'm Wendy.
You screwed up already. Good night.
That's all right.
Sorry.
Roger, did Robin ever see your version of him?
He did,
what
man.
What did he think?
I heard that through Rick Overton that he really liked it.
Yeah.
That's why he's hunting my ass now. That's why we're doing this thing for the last 3 years. Bill dragged me out of retirement. I was just a painter.
Yeah.
He says, hey, you want to do a show? You want to do a tribute to Robin? No, you don't have to.
Well, I've been doing a show at Legends of Comedy for, mm-hmm. for like 21 years. Mm-hmm. I was in Vegas, and I had this friend of mine that did Sam Kinison, a great Sam Kinison. And I said, and I'd seen all these the tribute shows, you know, Michael Jackson and all that stuff. And I thought, gee, if you can do that with singers, can you do it with comedians? So I called them up, and I said, hey, I got a guy that does Sam Kinison. We don't do comedians. Click. And the light bulb went over, and I thought, wow. So I went about looking for different people.
Yes.
I spent about a year, and there's a big difference. The lookalike world is people that happen to look alike.
Yeah.
But they have talent and tell jokes.
Which not easy.
You can't lip sync comedy.
Right.
And so I found Rodney Dangerfield and a Jack Benny and a Red Skelton and a Jay Leno and
Phyllis Diller, I hope.
I had a Phyllis Diller. I had a Bill Cosby.
He's out of the show.
Might be difficult to pull off today. Yeah.
Roger. And then I heard about Roger, and I called him up, and I said, hey, would you like to do it? He said, no.
this was after Robin died, and I wasn't going to have anything to do with
Before, this was years ago.
Oh, that's right. That was the first time I said
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah. And then after.
I denied him twice.
Yeah.
Mr. Jesus, hello, friends.
And then after.
You can walk without that chair, friend.
And then.
Okay. My chair's too high. I feel like a baby. Can I please have. Can we get the people over here to adjust this? It's too much.
Just stand up.
I'm standing now.
I called Roger, and I said, let's do a strictly Robin Williams tribute
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
Strict, yes.
And,
okay. Do you have to get permission from anybody to pull this off or not?
Huh?
No, nothing.
Well, you know, I've studied this
good
over
question,
years.
Bill.
It's an impression.
It yeah.
You can't stop people from doing impressions.
Right.
No.
But you are so right with the rock and roll tribute bands. There yeah. were
but
no
you know,
comic
what,
ones.
People gave me flack. They, oh, it's too soon. I said, well, when is that magic number when
yeah.
it's not? It's been 4.5 years now,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, what it really is it's a magic show. We're making you think you're seeing something that
and you're
not.
Keeping those names
and
alive.
We're keeping the experience. It's like Elvis. People loved Elvis
yes.
so much, they don't want to let go.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so they go to the Elvis show. And this is the same. People loved Robin so much, and Roger recreates that live experience.
Beautifully.
Yeah.
What was the
Thank
key,
you.
Roger, to his amazing success? What do you think Robin Williams
well,
was doing?
There's been a lot of bios about him recently, about his
I'm
life.
I'm reading one right now.
Which one?
Robin.
I read that.
Really good.
Yeah, I read that. And also the HBO thing, which I thought was incredible,
yeah.
but it's ultimately very sad.
Yeah.
What I'm doing in this show is bringing back the feeling we had when we first saw him on Mork and Mindy, when people went, oh my God, what is that?
Yeah.
So at my age of 57 years old, I come on stage in this long hair, and
yeah.
I was going to say wig, but really? Let's be serious. Let's not give away all the beauty tips now. And a younger physique than I'm normally sporting, and athletically ready to do Robin at age 30,
yeah.
and I just have to explode and change the air the way he did in Mork and Mindy. It's
yeah.
exhausting.
Yeah.
But it's for me. And it's an experience for me, too. Every single night I go out there, I'm like, oh, damn, I'm in some big-ass shoes now. Look at this. And sometimes there's children in the audience. Kids are going to learn some new words today. You know? And you know, it's everything can happen when it's, you know, the top of my head comes off. The Robin just comes pouring out. And for me, it's exhilarating. It's
sure.
like hang gliding in a windstorm. And for the audience, you know, people, first of all, nobody's ever said you shouldn't do this. How dare you?
Right.
People embrace me. They're crying, mm-hmm. which isn't always good for a comedy show. They're peeing, which is nice.
That's
I hear these middle-aged, I peed a little. And which is good. In a nursing home, that's bombing. You just hear the bags fill up. But in this situation, it's wonderful. And I think Robin feels it, too, when people are laughing. I could see it on the video, so I'm just blown back by and I feel Robin's face creep up over my
really?
Oh yeah, oh come on, give it to me now. Oh yes, bring it out. Okay, okay, thank you. Let me speak now. It's overwhelming. It isn't. And sometimes they say, it's not just a show, it's a seance. Yeah. But we don't get morose. We never talk about the death and the depressing stuff. It's all that young Robin energy.
The positive energy.
Right. I'm exhausted now.
Bill, well, you're exhausted, but Bill, you must be exhausted hanging with him.
He comes off stage. Well, I open the show.
Yeah. And he's a great opening act, by the way. It's a 1-2 punch. Yeah,
sure.
But he'll come off stage and go, what did I do?
Yeah, it's a black. Like, I mean,
he's really a black member.
So yeah, me and Kevin are working in a black.
He gets so absorbed in the thing. He says, "What did I do? I don't remember what I did." You know,
the version of Robin that was just described, Robin's version, the Mork and Mindy version. That's when you knew him. When you worked with him on Mork and Mindy.
I knew him from the day he came to town.
Yeah,
we were great buddies or stuff, but we were, and I worked on Mork and Mindy for I did about 4 episodes of Mork and Mindy, and I would see him, now and then. He was always friendly. He was a real sweet guy.
Yeah.
And
were you Todd on Mork and Mindy? Was that the character's name?
Yes, Todd Norman Taylor.
Yeah.
I came on, and I worked with him and Jonathan Winters.
Wow.
Jonathan was very, you know, clown. And they'd sit there and they'd talk, and he was uncontrollable. They were both uncontrollable. I don't know how the show actually got made.
Yeah.
But I loved, and of course, so did Robin love Jonathan Winters from when we were children. I used to live up in Alaska. My dad was in the Army, and I would go to the Fort Library and rent records and listen to Jonathan Winters. So he was like an idol of mine.
Do you think, Bill, that maybe Robin recognized that Jonathan Winters was one of the only people on the planet who could truly understand what he was doing, that there were no limits, that he could just take anything and turn it into comedy gold?
Yeah, he really, Jonathan was quite a guy. I'll tell you, he had no ego. I'll got to tell you a little experience. One time I was sitting in the set, and they were rehearsing. If you've ever been on a studio where they do sitcoms, they have set after set after, next to each other. And when they're shooting on one set, the rest of the studio is dark. I was sitting in the audience, and there was nobody there except me, and I was just kind of watching. And he was over here by himself, Jonathan, over here in a dark set, talking to the wall. All right, Sergeant, let's get these things together. And I said, he's not doing this for ego. There's nobody watching him except me.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a spectrum here with some of these people, I think.
Yeah, and he was
right. It's true. Right, it's Captain, Rain Men.
Let's get them in the role. And I said, this guy's just doing this because this is what he does.
But Bill, you're like that too. I want to pick him up at his hotel.
Yeah.
And in the window, I see this giant fish with no hair bobbing up and down in the window. You can't see this, folks at home, but imagine. And I was with my girlfriend.
I studied mime for a few years.
Yeah.
But I had to get out of mime because the white makeup was killing me because I couldn't, had to go all the way back to the head.
That's too much.
I studied mime for a few, and Robin studied mime too.
It was obvious.
Yeah.
Wait, Roger, I'm watching
Wendy.
Be so antsy here. You're like a toddler. Should I give you my iPhone to play like Angry Birds while you're waiting to talk?
Angry Birds. Oh, yes, let's piss off some birds, shall we? Some computer birds. I don't know. It's not that I'm antsy. It's just that when we start talking about Robin, it gets into my body.
Yeah, I bet.
It really does. I'm an actor. Like, I'm just like a regular guy, and then you give me something to play with, like a Robin Williams character, and it gets in my body.
Of course.
So the impression...
It's not an impression.
It's a tribute.
It's more than an impression.
It's an impression
is something you do for 30
manifestation.
Seconds.
Manifestation.
Yes. Impression is something you do for 30 seconds. He does this for an hour.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a portrait.
The show is Robin, the ultimate Robin Williams tribute experience.
It's going on
at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. You want to go to comedyshrine.com. All your information's there. It's Roger Kabler. It's Bill Kirkenbauer. We'll pick this up in a moment. Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'll say,
Mr. Announcer, what will your pleasure be?
Let me take your order.
All right, Bill, I am completely exhausted.
I know. That was an interesting couple of minutes. Roger Kabler is here. Bill Kirkenbauer is here. They're part of Robin, the ultimate Robin Williams tribute experience. What a show. Go see him at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. Go to comedyshrine.com. All your ticket information is there.
It's tonight and tomorrow night. Now, tell me about the times.
Eight o'clock is the Robin show.
All right.
With Bill Kirkenbauer.
With Bill Kirkenbauer. Mm-hmm. And then at 10 o'clock, I'm headlining and do my own show.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't remember, I was on Just the 10 of Us.
Mm-hmm.
That ran for 3 years on an Emmy Award winning.
The Put Upon Father.
Yes, I played Coach Lovett. It was an Emmy Award winning show. I didn't get an Emmy, but it was an Emmy Award winning show. And then I did Tony Rolletti on Fernwood Tonight.
That's what I want to talk to you about.
Right. Oh, you're hysterical.
Yes, and that and
by
many
the way,
other things.
Bill, the funniest TV show ever created that you can't get on DVD.
What?
There's no DVD of Fernwood Tonight.
You can get it on YouTube.
No,
and
you know, it's music problems.
That's what it is. That's what it is. We talked to Norman Lear about it.
They couldn't clear the music.
I know.
Oh, that sucks.
So upsetting.
Same thing with my show. That's why it's not on DVD, because the girls did a lot of singing.
Yeah.
And they can't. They didn't clear it into perpetuity.
Yeah. Not fair. Yeah. Not fair. All right. So explain again. Oh, it's the Robin Williams show first. It's Bill Kirkenbauer's show after.
Right.
Bill's on the 8 o'clock. I'm not on the 10, but I'm doing improv at the 10, so you and I are going to have to compete for people.
That's right.
But I don't know. I'm going to do some Robin in the 10 o'clock improv show, but it'll be other characters, too. I do a lot of impressions, which I also do in the
Yeah, he also does in the show, too.
Yeah, I do
He does
like,
Robin, and then I come back out, and then he comes out and does all his incredible impressions.
The best De Niro I've ever seen, by the way.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Well, I don't want to talk about it right now.
God, you look like
him. Let me just stand 3 feet away.
And there's Godfather the Musical and Overactors Anonymous, which is also part of my repertoire. But I did want to talk a little bit about the content of the show, because I know there's some political awareness going on. First of all, I don't care. Second of all, no, but what happens is, in the way I've incorporated different characters is, you know, Robin used to do a lot of stuff like marginalizing people. Everybody. All walks of life.
Yeah.
And I do a bit in my act called, which is a little country western singer named Dwarf Brooks. I got friends in low places. And Mrs. Doubtfire stops and, oh, you're marginalizing people. She gives him a timeout.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't do that. So there's a discussion about what you can and can't do. So I can do the old vintage Robin style.
Yeah.
I've written most of my own material for the show. But Mrs. Doubtfire acts as the conscience of modern America, saying there's certain things you shouldn't do. Are you just going to do pee-pee caca today? Ooh, have a message, dear. So there's different characters.
That's a great idea.
For different reasons. And I have to sit there in a stool and have a timeout and be silent.
Yeah.
And the audience is like, what the hell is going on?
Yep. Now, I have to say this about Robin. Genius. No question about it. You can't argue it. Absolute genius. Right. However, he had a propensity to borrow material sometimes.
Oh, ask
Bill
about
true?
That.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah.
Tell us all about it, friends.
You can tell us.
I have to hear this.
You can tell us.
I'll give you one example.
All right.
I used to do a bit. I did it on the Merv Griffin show once. And I used to talk about how I was used to play Superman when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put a towel in the back of my shirt, and I'd talk about, and I'd get up on a stool, and I'd jump and dang like Superman. And at the end, I would put, when I was younger, I'd put on a hat and a coat, and I kind of looked like Clark Kent.
Yeah.
You know, that. So I did this one night at the Westwood Comedy Club, like on a Friday before he went on. And I said, then I would run and jump and land on the stool on my stomach. Okay.
So it looked like you were flying.
Yeah, like I was flying. A very funny visual.
Yeah.
And so Saturday night, he went on before me, and he goes, oh, Superman on drugs. And he laid on his back on the thing. And when he came out, I go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You have never seen you do that before. You saw me do that. Well, I'm sorry. It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I'm not the only one. You know, he borrowed.
In the book, Bill,
I'm not
the
only one that said that. This is a common thing.
They say in the book that guys would come up to him and say, hey, that thing you said about this, that's mine. And he would just write you a check for $1,000.
I had the same lawyer as he did.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
At one point. And he told me that every week he was writing $1,000 checks.
Really?
You know, you have to ask yourself, though, with Robin, because I've had this experience too, when I end up having no filter on stage and just stuff that I have taken in.
Mm.
Somehow or other comes flying back out. But I'm conscious of, if it is somebody else's, I'll mention the name. Oh, I just ripped off Paula Poundstone.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
Or something. And I try not to do anybody, but I can understand how it could happen. I think some of it's unintentional.
And I'm not defending Robin Williams from stealing at all, but seeing your Superman, had you guys just been in a room together, you'd be riffing and he'd go, check this out. This is Superman on drugs.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I had a 3-minute bit, and he turned it not into a 2-second joke.
Oh, okay,
and he would do to. But again, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
And I would say, really, to be honest, it was a minuscule percentage of what he did.
Yeah.
Still, though.
I know guys that he, up in San Francisco, comedians you've never heard of, that contributed to his act voluntarily and involuntarily. But still, I would say the percentage of questionable material was maybe 5%.
That's not terrible. That's not terrible.
It wasn't terrible.
He didn't need to do that, though.
No, he didn't need to do it. I said, when you walked in, we weren't on the air yet, but I said, you're in two of my all-time favorite TV shows. Fernwood Tonight is one of them. The other one is a show Wendy and I reference all the time.
What?
Make Me Laugh.
Oh, yes. I forgot. That's
the
one. Make Me Laugh.
With Bobby Van.
Oh, God. It was a great show because you didn't need punchlines. The buzzer, right. The buzzer was the punchline.
Right.
In fact, if they laughed too, I'll tell you a funny story if you got to think. One time, it was me, Murray Langston, and Kip Adada.
Yeah.
Damon Wilson came on. And he was there.
The guy from San Francisco.
Yeah,
Lamont.
Right.
What was kind that of, guy you made?
Kind of a testy guy. Kind of a testy guy.
Yeah.
So Kip Adada goes out there with a cream pie in his hand.
Uh-huh.
Now, Damon's dressed really nice, and he's looking at this pie like, you know, what are you going to do? And Kip Adada, at the end, he hits himself in the face with the pie,
yeah.
But it goes on Damon.
Oh.
Now, Damon is pissed.
Oh, no.
Oh, then Murray goes out.
Yeah.
And he's
the
got
unknown comic.
Yeah, the unknown comic.
Oh, that's
yeah.
right.
With a monkey mask on, grabs Damon by the face and kisses him on the mouth. Damon was just, now I go out, and I don't want to hurt the guy. I'm just there. And he started flicking whipped cream and stuff at him. And needless to say, he didn't laugh.
That's when they created the show Make Me Angry.
Yeah,
it was a sequel show.
Afterwards, Damon went out to his limo and got a gun.
What?
What?
And they had to stop. They called security and had to take him.
Oh, now it's Make My Day. Here we go.
Take his gun away from him and escort him off of the... Oh,
that's
awful. That's
awful.
That's a
what
behind
you do,
the
you
scenes
big dummy? Don't bring a gun on national television. What's the matter with you? What's you, sucker? Oh,
but,
Pop,
but yeah,
ridiculous.
It was a great show, and I didn't want him to laugh. I mean,
no.
I wanted to finish my bit a lot.
Get your check and go home.
I did a whole week when I interacted with a TV. See, I sold TV equipment.
Oh, you
back
did?
Then, back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I did this thing where I pre-recorded stuff and then interacted with myself. I had a comedy team of Kirk and Bauer. And I go, I'm Kirk. And the TV go, I'm Bauer. Together. And then I shot myself and I did these interactive things. And if I do say so myself, I was ahead
was
of my time.
Stuff. You were way ahead of your
You're
time.
You're a great pairing, you two. Can yep. I just say
yeah,
that?
I just took a breather. I let Bill go.
Yeah,
let him go.
But this show's about Roger and the Robin tribute.
Actually, no, it's really about Robin. Can I talk to you a bit about the... How much time we have left?
Like 30 seconds.
Yeah. 30 seconds. I'm doing a movie called Being Robin. It's about my experience creating this show, about the rehearsals in the woods and all the insanity. And people think it's a spiritual thing or a miracle or a hoax. And you can go fund it on GoFundMe, Being Robin. And we'll be talking about that tonight, too. It's really an incredible experience. Can I have $2 million, please?
Yeah, whatever you need. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's what it's going to take to make a real movie.
You a quick
Thank
check.
You.
The show is called Robin, the Ultimate Robin Williams Tribute Experience. It's going on at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. Go to ComedyShrine.com. All your information is there. It's Roger Kabler and it's Bill Kirkenbauer. Guys, great to meet both of you.
Thank
Thanks
you for having
out.
Us in
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A quick break. Some news. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Domati Pongo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here, WGN Radio.
Oh, go on, Wendy.
I was just going to say, I love TV again. There was a time that I just wasn't really watching that much.
You're
and
back
now,
into it?
There's too much.
Alexander Zalbin is here from The Decider. Alexander, you heard Wendy. There's too much TV. What do we do?
Just stop watching it. Just get out of the house. Go
Gotta
to the
stop.
Woods. Hide. It's coming for you.
Yep.
It's coming. They're going to start streaming things on rocks and trees soon.
Don't let it happen,
excellent.
Wendy. All right, here's question number one to you, Alex. Every time I see a show now, we're a couple of weeks into the new season. Most shows have premiered, but not all. But I keep hearing in ads they go, the new number one hit on television or the best drama on television. More people mm-hmm. watched our show than any. What truly is, of all the new shows, what has moved the needle the most, would you say?
You know, it's still early going, like you said. I think last week we talked about Manifest. That had a surprisingly huge debut. I think it was 10.3 million in the initial viewing, not even with streaming or anything like that, which is pretty enormous given the fracturing of the landscape nowadays. But the thing is that I think everybody knows this, but they're finagling the numbers, right? It's they're talking about some things are, okay, this is the biggest debut if you add 3 days on streaming, plus you're only looking at the segments of the audience from 18 to 49 that watches on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So that's how they can trump these numbers. But
don't say Trump.
Ultimately, yeah, Manifest is the only one that really seems to be breaking out, and everything else is just kind of doing okay.
Did that do as well the second week? I like it. I'm sucked into Manifest. Did it do as well?
You know, I'm not 100% sure of the week two numbers yet. I can definitely look those up to you, but I believe, I think it's the sort of thing that it's going to hold on, particularly because it did debut so strong. People will be very interested in following that mystery. So we'll see what happens.
They always say, though, that that's the telltale sign of a true hit is despite having incredible numbers in week one, it's the second or the third week that really is the telltale.
Yeah, and particularly with the amount of TV and movies and everything else coming out, I think we're gonna very soon see that things are going to drop off even quicker. Particularly, some of the big premieres haven't even happened yet. You know, it used to be back in the day, post Labor Day, you'd see everything would be coming out. Now there's a ton of the CW is starting to premiere all of its stuff this week and next week. There's a bunch of other big premieres coming up. So we haven't even seen the Conners yet, the Roseanne reboot, which is definitely going to be huge and suck up a lot of air in the room. So we'll see what happens.
And there's a few shows that have done well in the past, like Blacklist is one. I don't think the premiere of Blacklist has taken place until January or something this year, right?
Yeah, particularly, again, with streaming and the amount of shows coming out, people are starting to move very, very slowly to more of almost a two-season launch, I would say. It used to be you'd take a break in December or so and then come back, but now they're looking at it more as a binge model, as we're going to release 13 episodes, sometimes even 20 episodes, all in a season without any break, so you can get people talking about it. Because really, to get back to your point about that week two drop, the thing that kills a hit new hit show almost more than anything else is that weeks-long break. You've seen that with the first one that came to mind. There was a show called Revolution. It was a sci-fi show,
yeah,
very similar to Manifest, I think, where it had these ongoing mysteries. It debuted very strong. People were really excited about it. They thought it was going to be really huge. Then it took a couple of months off, and when it came back, nobody watched it.
Explain for a second. You mentioned something about the ratings, about a three-day rating. So if I understand this correctly, they rate a television show three ways now. People watching at the time that it's aired, and then there's like a 24-hour turnover, and then there's like a 72-hour turnover. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's even more than that. I mean, there's live plus three, which is essentially people watching rebroadcasts of the show, as well as streaming numbers from almost any platform they can pull those numbers from. But then there's live plus seven as well. And when you go to networks like, say, Freeform, I think, is a very good example of this, where they have a much younger audience, and a younger audience that doesn't really watch TV live. So the broadcast is fine, and of course they want to say X number of people watch this in the opening night, isn't this huge? But really what they're looking for in the long run is how are people talking about it? Are they telling their friends, you missed this, and then 7 days later they watched it? So every network has its own metrics that it's looking at and its own way of looking at things, certainly with the broadcast networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox. Advertising is such a huge part of it, and they lose a lot of that through streaming. So the actual live views are much more important. But when you start going to cable or premium cable, and definitely for streaming, that becomes less important, and it's more about how many people are watching it over time.
You mentioned viewership drops on the second week, and sometimes viewership drops throughout a season of a show. I'm talking about The Walking Dead. That has really fizzled. I'm still watching it. My son Dylan, who turned me onto it, has not watched it. But with the final episode of Rick, which, why do we have to know? Why couldn't they have just let us find out? But it's getting back to its roots, isn't it?
So I've seen the first couple of the episodes of the new season, and as you know, I'm a big Walking Dead fan. I've watched every episode of the show. I totally get people have jumped off board over the past two seasons. It's been very violent, a lot of gunplay. The Negan storyline went on for far too long. But going into the season, putting the Rick Grimes thing aside for the moment, they've got a new showrunner for the first time in a really long time, Angela Kang. She's been a writer on the show for a really long time. And it feels new and fresh. It really almost feels like a new show in a way. For the first time in the show's history, there's a new credit sequence, which looks and feels totally different. Character dynamics are very different, and it's a lot more about rather than how do we survive in this world, it's we have survived in this world. What's next? What do we build back? How do we reclaim a world that's been taken over by zombies and nature?
And we need really to know that when this happens, we need to know how to rebuild.
So true. So true. I don't think that the producers of the show, Alex, would want us to know that Rick was dying out or that this character was going to die out, but it almost became a leaked story, right? I mean, it's better for them for us to be surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is always a bummer when you know, oh, this person has a bullet, whatever it's called, a bullet. I'm completely blind.
On his back.
Bullseye. Thank you. I don't know why my brain fried there on his head. So that's a bummer. But I think two things happened with Rick, right? One, yes, there's leaks. They knew this was going to get out. They knew people would find out about his last day. So instead, they decided to come out front and say, yes, we're not going to tell you how this happens, but this does happen. But then the other thing is it becomes must watch. Even people who have tuned out for the past couple of seasons, you're going to want to know how Rick Grimes goes out. So it becomes an advertising opportunity to draw people back into the show, which is smart in its own right.
I guess.
Alexander Zalbin's our guest, managing editor at Decider.com, a great website if you like television, if you like entertainment. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill and Wendy on WGN. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Alex, one other quick Walking Dead note, and then we'll move on to other things. Every week in the credits of Fear the Walking Dead, they say Maggie Grace. And I know Maggie Grace from Lost. She was the rich girl on Lost, right? And then I kept thinking, when are they going to put her on the show? They keep saying her name in the credits, but they're not putting her on the show. And then I find out that Elle, the girl who drives the giant arsenal wagon, that's Maggie Grace. Mm-hmm. She looks so different. I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, and she's great on the show. I think they've done a really good job of rejuvenating that cast and bringing in new blood. Jenna Elfman's pretty good on it, too.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yep.
I never got into that. I watched maybe the first season of Fear the Walking Dead. And
didn't
it
do it for you?
No, I didn't. They weren't beloved characters like they were on Walking Dead, and I kind of bailed.
Right, right. Let's talk about a show called Big Mouth. I like the people behind Big Mouth. What is it?
So this is an animated comedy on Netflix. The second season is debuting today. It's from Nick Kroll, John Mulaney. Some of the other voices are Jesse Klein, Jason Mantzoukas, Jenny Slate, Fred Armisen, Maya Rudolph, Jordan Peele. It is an animated comedy about a bunch of seventh graders who are dealing with puberty. And it is the raunchiest, most over-the-top show you've ever seen, while at the same time really saying some very poignant things about the experience of going through puberty, both from a male and female perspective. It's definitely not something you should watch in the office or where anybody can see you, because there's nudity, there's sex, there's absolutely everything. You will not believe what you're seeing at most points, but it's also very funny and very worth watching.
I love both those guys. John Mulaney was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and he's really become, if you listen to any of the comedy channels on satellite radio, he's one of the best guys on there. Nick Kroll is really funny. So it's Big Mouth. And where can people see this? On Netflix?
On Netflix. Second season debuts today.
All right. I have two favorite shows. One is Better Things with Pamela Adlon, who I believe is Bobby Hill's voice on King of the Hill. I love that show. Do you know when the new season starts with that? On FX, I believe.
Good question. I don't know, actually. I think it got a little tricky because Louis C.K. was behind the scenes, even though Pamela Adlon is... said he has nothing to do with the show, but I haven't really heard anything about a third season at this point. Presumably it would be at some point soon, but because it's so artistically driven by her, it's very much up to her when it happens.
And has anyone picked up The Mick with Caitlin Olsen? Please tell me yes. Come on, they pick up Last Man Standing. Why don't they pick up The Mick?
Because they know you like it.
I know. I'm sorry. It's a fantastic show. She's wonderful on it. If you are looking for your fix, she's back on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia this season, which is as hilarious as ever. So you can check her out there. But hopefully she'll get another sitcom soon.
Has anyone picked up Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah, it's coming back with an all-male reboot.
All right, I'm in. I can't wait. Doctor Who has been on forever. I'm not kidding, forever. But now, for the first time ever, there's a change in Doctor Who. What's the change?
It's a big change. There's actually been 13 actors that have played the Doctor. And for the first time this Sunday, the show is getting a female lead. If you've never seen it before, it's from England. It's a time-traveling, space-traveling show. And it's sort of like James Bond in terms of them recasting actors all the time. This is the first time, though, that a woman has been in the lead. Jodie Whittaker, who you might recognize from the English version of Broadchurch, is the lead there. There's also a new showrunner, new cast. Without getting into any spoilers, excuse me, I've seen the first episode, and it's wonderful. If you've never seen the show before, you can jump right in. They explain absolutely everything. It's like a new pilot. If you have seen the show before, excuse me again, you'll be crying by the end.
Now, here's a question, since you compared it to James Bond. Anytime they talk about changing anything about James Bond, like what if there's an African-American James Bond? What if it's a female James Bond? Everybody goes crazy and says, no, that would ruin James Bond. Is there an uproar about Doctor Who being a woman, or is everybody accepting of it?
You know, it's funny. You would expect there would be, but the only person who really said, no, Doctor, the Doctor should not be a woman, was the previous showrunner who came out and said that. But everybody else, when they find out, really felt like, you know what, it's about time. And all of the previous actors who played the Doctor said, this is great. She's great. She's going to do a wonderful job. She's good friends with David Tennant, who's one of the most popular actors to play the Doctor, and he thought she'd be brilliant. It's definitely something that fans will take adjusting to, but to the credit of the premiere, it jumps right into it. It certainly recognizes the fact that she is a woman, but it doesn't spend a lot of time on it, and she owns the role completely in her own way. It's again, it's rather wonderful.
Alex, in all the TV you've ever watched, have you ever seen a show's production values improve as dramatically as Doctor Who's? When you see the episodes from the 60s or the 70s, it looks like something a bunch of kids made in their basement, and now it's really high-tech.
Well, this is one of the other things that I think is fantastic about this new episode is they have drastically increased the effects over time, but this new episode is a dramatic leap forward. The monsters look better. They have maybe the scariest villain they've ever had in the history of the show. The action is huge. It's great. It definitely feels like it's up to 2018, and it's wonderful to see.
And before we talk to you next week, we will have seen the season finale of Better Call Saul. So that's coming up on, is it Monday or Tuesday? I can never remember because I
don't.
Okay. That is the season finale. It's heating up. I can't wait for it.
I'm so nervous about it at this point. I don't know if folks listening have been keeping up with the show, but there's
Bill.
Wait, I have to take my headphones off for just a second because I'm two episodes back. Hold on. Go ahead.
He's not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
There are some surprising characters that are in danger that I did not think were going to be in danger by the end of the season, and I wake up every morning worried about them and what's going to happen.
Oh, wow. That says a bunch. It's the always worried Alexander Zelbin. I've never seen this side of you before, Alex. I'm scared for you. Managing editor of Decider.com. It's a great website, Decider.com. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Friday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks,
hopefully
guys.
You won't be nervous then. It'll be post-finale.
I'll calm down.
All right, good. Thank you.
All right, a quick break, some news, and then
actually, no break.
What?
If I can
no
just
break.
Say, yes.
This is insane.
We are going to go right to the news.
Kim, stay there for just a second if you could.
Sure.
What are you hearing in the newsroom in terms of the Van Dyke trial? Is there going to be
a verdict?
Yeah.
You know, we don't know at this point. We do know the jury is coming. Like I said in my newscast, asked a question, but they're sequestered, and we won't know, you know, until they have something to say. So I really can't give you a timeline at this point.
All right. My feelings are, and I don't know anything about anything.
Oh.
Especially this.
Interesting.
But I feel like they're going to come to a conclusion and announce their verdict before the weekend. Wouldn't you think that? Even probably before the lunch break.
If it's been reached.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were sequestered last night. Uh-huh. If they don't reach it, they're going to have to be sequestered all weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they're going on 12 hours. They got it actually at 12:28 yesterday, so they're almost at 12 hours here.
But you could certainly see where, in a case like this, it's such a highly debated case, that there could be a lot of back and forth. That it's not, I don't see this being a very clear-cut verdict. I don't
know. Well, and also the fact now that they can also deliberate second-degree murder as well as first-degree murder. So now, you know, that was kind of thrown in at the end. So maybe that's a lot to think about.
That's an option with a lesser penalty, of course. Right. Yeah.
I really have talked about wanting to be a juror, and if I was on this case, I know that whatever way I decided, if it wasn't unanimous, say I was the holdout, I know that I would just give in to pressure. I know
it. Would you?
I would feel like I wouldn't want
to. Even if you felt extremely strongly the opposite way, let's say 11 people were saying, no, it's got to be this way, but you felt so strongly the opposite way, you'd still give in?
Well, I would push back for a while, but then at some point you'd feel like you have 11 people like totally against you going, really? I want to get out of here. Come on.
You know, Wendy, though, but once you get so vested and you realize somebody's life hangs in the balance, and that you know they have small children and a wife and a family, and then, you know, and then you see the other side, the victim's family. I mean, at that point, I think you have to realize that whatever this takes, I have to do the right thing. We have to, you know, you have to stick to your guns no matter how you feel. I think you just have to stay with your gut.
I hope the jurors do that. I just feel like I'd get peer pressured into changing my
mind.
I'm
sure there is some of that.
Yeah, but you don't know these people, and you're never going to see them again. You know? So it's different than, like, the peer pressure that I mean, I've never been on a jury, so I don't know. But I would sense that it's a different feeling that you have when you're pressured by friends and people you know and people you're in contact with all
the time.
It's got to
be. Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
And St. Ignatius, there have been reports all morning that the children will be released once a verdict has been reached, which is driving me crazy. I keep hearing them saying that. And that's when you wouldn't want to release, because their point is so many people commute to this school, so planes, trains, and automobiles, they're going to be out there trying to get places. So they said, once the verdict is released, we're going to release the students. I feel like you're just releasing them into potential danger in the streets.
So regardless of what the verdict is,
that's
guilty or not
guilty,
they would still send the kids home.
Once the verdict is reached, they've said that they plan for protests.
Is that to avoid any incidents going on school grounds? Is that what they're anticipating or what?
I don't know. I just know the reports I've heard is for the safety of our students. Yeah. They will be released when the verdict is reached, which to me, that's the worst time to release them. Either keep them at school or take today off.
Oh, that's an interesting tactic that I've never heard of before. I don't know that's ever happened before. It's very strange. They've shown shots of Chicago police officers, and Kim, you may have said it during the news. I didn't hear all the news, but was it 4,000?
What's wrong with you not listening to my news?
I was knitting. I like to knit. Is it
you can't knit and listen at the same time?
One or the other for me. Is it 4,000?
He was humming show tunes as well.
Right. Wendy, don't give everything away.
Sorry.
Is it 4,000 additional police officers that were added today?
4,000.
4,000?
Absolutely, no one is getting vacation time, and they're on 12-hour shifts.
Yeah.
That was decided yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were here yesterday when they were right in front of our building on Wacker. They brought out all of the Chicago police, the horses that they use, and they were using that as a staging area. So they had a lot of horses down here and officers, I guess, that are mounted.
Well,
they're definitely preparing.
That's something you have to do.
Absolutely. Hopefully nothing happens, but you have to be prepared.
Right. They keep saying that peaceful protests are expected, and hopefully that's as deep as it goes. But in a case like this, you never know how deep it'll go. So,
what about these little flyers that have been posted throughout the city?
What are the flyers saying?
Well, for instance, an emergency notice, the murder trial of Jason Van Dyke, the pig who murdered Laquan McDonald with 16 shots is nearing its final days. When the jury announces a verdict, gather at 71st and Jeffrey. If they free the killer cop, the city must stop. It was discovered near the courthouse. I hope this is just being put up there just with no truth behind it. It's worrisome to me.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it is. All right, so we'll keep an eye on all of these things. We don't know, as Kim pointed out, we don't know an exact time, if at all today, right, Kim? It may not even be today,
absolutely.
Right?
I mean, it could go for days. We don't know.
Is it one of those things where it's better or worse? You know how they always, a lot of times in politics, they'll bury a story late on a Friday or into a Saturday because they know that the coverage isn't as big? That's not the case with something like this, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, I just think that there's a lot to go over. There was so many witnesses, you know, so many people testified on both sides, and, you know.
And I saw
you have to go over each thing with a fine-tooth comb.
WGN-TV's Julie Unruh was at the courthouse yesterday at 26th and Cal, and she had said that there were two alternates that were released.
Right.
And they were letting them do interviews, so they were saying that if they were to make a decision, if they were part of the deliberation, they would have issued both of them a guilty verdict.
Why were they released?
Because they had, how many alternates are there to begin? There's 12 jurors.
I think there were four alternates. They dismissed two.
Two of them.
Yeah.
So now there are two left in case someone falls ill or has to leave. But they didn't need all four of them, so they released
two
of them.
Okay, let me correct that. There were five alternates. They dismissed three, so there are two left.
Okay. Well, the only two, from my understanding, we're talking to people.
They just feel because it's so close to completion, it doesn't make sense to keep all five.
Yeah, because if somebody calls in sick or leaves early for some unforeseen reason, they still have two others that could take their spot.
I get it. Okay. All right. But they would have said, as you were saying, they would have both gone with a guilty.
With a guilty verdict.
Yeah. Interesting. Hmm. All right. Well,
but they are not part of the deliberations.
Right.
But they were just saying after watching the evidence, that's what they would have come to the conclusion
and
of.
And you had mentioned that they were sequestered. They would be sequestered through the weekend. Has it been sequestering all the way through the trial?
No, just last night. Just last night when the jury started deliberating. And Kim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe last night was the first night.
Yes, last night was the first night.
Closing arguments ended.
Yeah.
They were able to go home but not talk to anyone about it. And then last night after the closing arguments, that's when they began deliberations and they called it for the day, and that's when they had to be sequestered.
Isn't it a little surprising that they weren't sequestered throughout the entirety? No. I just think in a world where you're so easily influenced by outside resources, everything from newspapers to internet to any conversations you have, how could they be online and not see something about the trial or turn on a TV and not see something about the trial?
I heard it reported, and I think here I heard it, that Judge Gahan said, if you're in a room, if you walk in a room and something about the trial is on TV, walk out of the room. If you are listening to something or walk into a conversation and that's being talked about, walk out. And some juror said, my brother-in-law was asking me questions about it. And the judge said, you know, what did you say to him? And she said, nothing. I didn't reveal any information.
Yeah.
And then Judge Gahan went on and said, if your brother-in-law asks you another question, tell him I'm going to throw him in jail.
Really?
Yeah. But you can go about your business. I mean, it's just once they start deliberating, that's when you can't be coerced or take suggestions from a family member. So they're sequestered. I can't imagine that this wouldn't, if they've come to a decision, I can't imagine it wouldn't be released because they're going to spend all weekend. And I don't think they're, you know, it's like the Ritz-Carlton or anything.
All right. Well, we will certainly keep you posted on any news, any late-breaking news that happens. Stick around. More show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about the Van Dyke trial. No verdict has been reached yet, but everybody's a little apprehensive.
Yeah, just I hope everyone behaves. You know, that's why it's justice will be served, hopefully. Kevin, you have called us. How are you?
I'm fine, and just so you know that I heard about the Evelyn Woodhead speed reading course on roller derby.
Oh, you did? Good.
But my wife's a teacher in the Midway area, and I'm not going to she's at a grammar school, and I'm not going to tell you which one, but I got a text about an hour ago saying that the police were at her school with a threat over social media that if they don't get the verdict they want, they're going to burn down Midway schools.
My
now, that's
God.
The stuff these guys are dealing with. And believe it or not, or do what you want, but, you know, how tough is it to deal with this every minute of, you know, for the last few weeks?
I don't know what to say other than, you know, we need to be civil. We have to be civil whichever way this goes. That's why it went to trial.
I know. But I'm just telling you. Thanks.
Kevin, real quick. Kevin, you still there?
No. Well, good luck to your wife.
Hmm.
I can't even imagine kids being afraid of something like this either. It's not their fault. They're just trying to go to school.
Right, right, right. I know. I know. A strange story for you. Are you in the mood for a strange story?
Yes.
This is out of Holiday, Utah. A Utah family is figuring out how to replace more than $1,000 in cash that their two-year-old son sent through the shredder.
I saw this.
Ben and Jackie Belknap. First of all, I'm not positive you should let a two-year-old near a shredder. That seems
agreed.
Slightly dangerous. I'm an adult, and I have a shredder, and every single time I use the shredder...
Your wife has to watch you?
She has to watch me. I have to be supervised. And I constantly stare at all 10 fingers as I'm using
too.
It. Because I'm sure that at least one or two are going to go through the shredder. And you can't pick up the shreddings and go to Humana Med first and go, is there any way you could just super glue these and put these back on? You lose it forever. Not a good toy for a two-year-old, in my opinion. Ben and Jackie Belknap said that they have been saving up cash to pay Ben's parents back for University of Ohio football season tickets. They had $1,060 in an envelope ready to go when that envelope disappeared over the weekend. Ben and Jackie started searching the house. I'm digging through the trash, and she hollers, hey, I found it. Ben said she's holding the shredder, and she says, I think the money is in here. Jackie said their two-year-old son, Leo, was familiar with the shredder. Leo helps me shred junk mail and just things with our name on it, important documents that, or unimportant documents we want to get rid of. Leo apparently sent the envelope through the shredder sometime when they weren't looking. We just, for like 5 minutes, we just shuffled through it and there was no talking. We didn't know what to do, and then I broke the silence, and I'm like, well, this will make a great wedding story someday.
Oh, when the little kid gets married.
When Leo gets married.
Yeah.
When do you forgive him for shredding $1,060? Does that come soon, or does that come about the time of the wedding?
They're getting their money.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bring it all to the bank. Although, how does the bank, no one's going to sit there and do the giant jigsaw puzzle and trying to determine how much was there.
No.
Huh.
I called the guy the next morning, and he said, oh, we might be able to help you out. I was shocked, Ben said. He said, bag it up in little Ziploc bags, mail it to D.C., and in 1 or 2 years, you will get your money back.
What?
That's how long it would take, in 1 or 2 years. 2 years might be a long time to wait, but when that money does come back, little Leo will probably still be banned from going anywhere near the shredder. So this guy's advice was, send it in to D.C., they'll somehow piece it together, you'll get your money back. I'm not sure I believe them.
I do. It can't take that long.
2 years.
Joe has called. Are they going to get their money back, Joe?
So I can confirm there are services that will pay back notes that have been damaged.
Really?
Damaged like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was a YouTube video or if it was like a documentary that I'd seen. But yeah, there is a government service out there that will go through like flood damage notes and fire damage notes and piece them together.
I do know also that if you have over half of a bill, our dog chewed up a 20.
Yeah.
And I took it to the bank to get a new 20, and we didn't really have to because it was 3/4 there. But I felt weird giving it to somebody. So I just went to the bank.
Yeah, as long as you have 51%, they'll take it.
Yeah, I did not.
That's the cutoff is 51%.
So why don't you go home and cut a bunch of hundreds in half, Bill, and say, the dog ate a half of each of these.
All right.
It has to be 51%, though, otherwise they won't take it, for that reason alone.
But in a shredding case like this, they'll have way more than 51%, but it'll be indiscernible. You won't be able to tell what it is by looking at it. But they must have computers and stuff that can piece it together, right?
And they have individuals that will go through it and piece it together.
What a fun job that would be.
Yeah, whatever video I saw, these individuals were taking burnt notes, burnt and wet, and just you wouldn't even be able to tell that they were actually U.S. dollars, and pulling them apart individually, gluing them down, and trying to get a count of how much money was actually there.
Wow.
That would be a fun job. I love jigsaw
every day?
Puzzles. Well, not every day. I would
just
like to do it part-time. All right. Well, thanks for the info, Joe.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a good weekend as well.
I understood it because he said more than 51% of it, so I was able to figure it out. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Wendy and I are headed to the stream, and once a month, we have our friend Jerry Nunn come up and tell us things that are happening in and around Chicago. Today's that day.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.